Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to New Books in Game Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. On this channel, we talk about new and recent publications that deal with digital games as cultural artifacts, the act of playing with them, and the production and social paradigms of the industries behind them. My name is Rudolf Indest, the host of the channel. Before we jump right in, though, I want to let you know that if you like our show or a single episode, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or the audio platform of your very choice. You're more than welcome, of course, to leave feedback or questions on Spotify as well. Also, feel free to share this episode with your friends or wherever you see fit. And now back to our show. Today, we have a fascinating guest with us, Poppy Wild, author of the book Post-Human Gaming, Avatars, Gamers, and Entangled Subjectivities. Poppy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I wonder if you could begin the interview by telling us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a senior lecturer at Birmingham City University in the UK. I'm a senior lecturer in media and communications, and I'm an active researcher in the Birmingham Centre for Media and Cultural Research. So my main research interests are in critical post-humanism and video games, and then I spice it up a bit with sometimes doing some stuff on zombies as well.
That's a good introduction. Perfect. Now, of course, we have to check for your Ludo Street credibility. So please tell us, what's your favorite game and the one you're playing right now?
Such a difficult question to answer, and a great one, because obviously it always gets you kind of thinking, oh, God, what is it? What is it? So I started playing video games as a child, kind of, and I actually start the book by saying this, as a child, with my mum and my dad and my brother all kind of clustered around a computer screen together playing video games. So one of my earliest but favorite video games is Little Big Adventure, which is actually a 1994 game from EA, and absolutely love that. Has always going to have a very special place in my heart. And another one is of an old school kind of one, a bit later, 2003, Beyond Good and Evil by Ubisoft, which again, just a lovely game. excellent protagonist, and I've written about that a couple of times. But yeah, again, I could go on for ages. More recent ones like Horizon Zero Dawn, Industria, Inscription, Left Alone, which is, if anyone is a horror gaming fan, highly recommend Left Alone. But what I am playing now is Stray by Blue 12 Studios, and I'm doing some research on that. So it's a great game.
Perfect.
Now, let's dive right in. Your book explores the relationship between avatars and gamers in World of Warcraft, shedding some light on entangled subjectivities. Now, can you give our listeners a glimpse into how this dynamic contributes to post-human subjectivity and blurs the line between self and other?
Yeah, absolutely. So post-human subjectivity really kind of rejects humanistic ideas of anthropocentrism and also of the human as being kind of fully in control, master of their own destiny, autonomous, all of those sorts of things. So the critical posthumanism, as I use it, is very sort of led by feminist and new materialist work. And so really what it does is kind of think about, rather than the gamer as being in control of the avatar in video games, is that I look instead at entanglement and how the subjectivity that emerges from gaming is through this interaction, as Karen Brad says, of gamer and avatar. So Karen Brad's work on interaction looks at, rather than the idea of interaction, which suggests two kind of completely separate entities coming together, she suggests that interaction focuses more on this way of how, when things, what emerges when things come together. So as I say, for me in my research, it's about, rather than looking at the gamer being in control of the avatar, instead it's thinking, how does the subjectivity that we perform in that digital game space come about specifically because of these different entities coming together, with neither one of them more in control of the other, but looking at the avatar as an equal part in that relationship, that enables the gamer themselves to kind of be and do different things.
Hmm. Now, post-human empathy is a concept you also introduce in your research. How does this unique form of empathy manifest itself in the gaming experience? And what do you believe it adds to our broader understanding of empathy?
So empathy is often considered in different ways, such as like me considering myself in your situation. So I would be looking at the situation that you were in and kind of saying, oh, you know, I can imagine, you know, what would I do? How would I feel? Or what is called other-oriented perspective, where I'm imagining being you. So I'm not so much thinking about how I would be affected by your situation, but I'm imagining how you are being affected. So both of these different ways of thinking about empathy, again, really have kind of core beliefs in terms of that separation between self and other. So as I say, in humanism, that's kind of what we get a lot, this sense of us being independent, autonomous, kind of static, bounded beings who, as I said before, are kind of in control. Whereas to look at that from a post-human perspective, really what we're kind of doing is seeing how all of the things around us, environments, others, be they human or non-human, animals, machines, and kind of atmospheres also shape who we are. And of course, that comes into different levels of kind of social and cultural avenues as well. And so empathy, as I'm looking at it through this idea of post-human empathy that I propose, is thinking about this rather than as that kind of strict self-other division and those different categories, considering how empathy, again, emerges through this specific entanglement of, in this case, the avatar and the gamer. So that empathy is then considered in my book through different affective and emotional situations, as well as kind of goal-oriented ways. So basically kind of thinking about how am I experiencing or being affected by in embodied ways by what is happening to, for example, the avatar body, but also thinking about how am I coming together with the avatar's goals and my goals, and so taking on a kind of enmeshed perspective. So for example, when we play a video game, the avatar is given specific tasks, you know, the avatar character is given certain things to do. And so if we are playing the game as intended, and of course some people are not, and they're looking for different deviant strategies, but if we are looking to play the game as intended, we also need to take on those goals. The goals of the avatar character become our goals as well. And those goals have to be aligned in order for us to progress in the game in that particular way. So rather than thinking about empathy as being sort of owned by an individual, so, you know, for example, sometimes we'll think about kind of someone being called an empathetic person. Mm. Instead, this kind of post-human empathy that I'm looking at is really, again, emerging from how these different entities are coming together. Again, another thing with empathy is that it's often seen as, in some theorizations at least, as a human-to-human perspective. So again, a post-human form of empathy disrupts that and looks at a kind of, in this case, human and machine empathy. So really it's kind of trying to explore again those kind of affective and embodied perspectives, which is again very central to sort of feminist critical post-humanism, bringing the body back into the picture and accounting for those different ways of feeling and understanding those as a valid form of knowledge production. I was just going to say, so the kind of way that it kind of emerges in my research is looking at, as I say, so my book, as you said, focuses on World of Warcraft. And so I focus on my relationship with my avatar, a team, in this book. So what I write about is how our relationship is kind of formed and how that emerges through different, I guess, kind of ways of coming to know the game, thinking about the subjectivity that I come from, thinking about how that is performed in different ways and how it is embodied in different ways, as well as considering, you know, when that kind of fits into different methods of understanding the self. So as much as I kind of talk about empathy and these kind of affective and emotional and goal-oriented ways of kind of being with the avatar, I do also talk about things like when you're bored, when you're playing games, because there are parts of gaming that are boring. You know, there's those bits that like you can't get over, or when you're grinding because you need to like get a particular resource. But again, that is very much a kind of I think the same as our everyday lives, right? So, you know, in a non-digital environment, I get bored in the same way as in a digital environment I do. And of course, video games are there to try and keep you engaged. They want you to have those heightened moments of affect and engagement. They want you to have those really kind of highly embodied and empathetic moments with the avatar. They want you to have, you know, for example, jump scares and moments where it's really difficult so that then you can have that sense of achievement. But it's also kind of mixed in with all of these other wider parts of the experience. And all of those really inform who we are, both within the game and without, because of course, it's not like when we log off from the game, we just leave it all behind and it disappears from our mind and our memory and who we are. But we carry that with us. And so the avatar and the game also feeds into our wider subjectivity.
Now, your relations are perfect for our third question, because you already have been mentioning World of Warcraft. So your work challenges the idea of strict binaries disrupting conventional notions of self and other. Could you share specific instances or observations from World of Warcraft that exemplify this disruption and highlight the post-human nature of subjectivity in gaming?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and read out a few of my notes from within the book. So the way that I've done the research for this book is it's an autoethnographic method. So as I said, I'm really writing about my experiences in World of Warcraft with one particular avatar, with a team. And so it's very much kind of using that relationship and that subjectivity to explore post-humanism and to explore kind of performative elements and empathy and motivations and achievements in that particular kind of case study, if you will. So a few different, throughout the book, I draw on field notes that I made from playing the game and then kind of analyze them in relation to those different concepts and ideas. So I've got an example here of this kind of notion of embodied empathy. So, and this is the note. I'm completing a quest underwater, diving for relics in a deep, wide lake. I'm absorbed in my task, deep beneath the water where the colors and sounds are dulled, and I am lulled into that ethereal state of being. The team's air supply seems ample until suddenly it doesn't, and I am forced to ascend. I begin to worry when I don't break the surface. I hadn't realized I was so deep. I need to get a team to the surface, and I find myself holding my own breath, a worried look adorning my face as I watch the air supply dwindle and watch her body rise. I make it and breathe again. So what's happening there is this kind of situation of, I don't, you know, physically need to be holding my own breath, but in having that kind of empathetic state with the avatar, I am holding my breath. I'm feeling that same kind of that panic and that worry of being deeper than I realized, and you know, not wanting to die and not wanting her to die. And so there's this kind of idea of again, that sort of enmeshment there, that I'm really thinking about how my body is reacting to that. And then I've got another example. Again, these are very kind of heightened effective moments.
Yeah.
But one here, again, which looks at kind of that embodied empathy. A team falls from a great height and I gasp. It is completely involuntary. I am in that moment her, falling perhaps to her, my death. It is a ridiculous concept, because even if a team were to die, I would be fine. And it would take just moments to run my spirit through the graveyard to find her body and resurrect. Note the my her complications. The boundaries are blurred. She is not me, but she is not not me. And this is what is often referred to as pronoun play. This idea of kind of when we narrate our experiences from playing games, we can often sort of switch between this idea of me, her, we, I. And so this, again, kind of demonstrates that way in which our subjectivity isn't just kind of fixed in this specific sense of me being separate from a team. You know, I'm reflecting on, you know, this idea of like, well, if a team were to die, I would be fine. You know, I know that the avatar's death doesn't mean that I am physically going to die myself, but I'm very implicated within that experience. And so there are, again, those affective and embodied moments of feeling with the avatar, and how that shapes, again, our kind of understanding of how we experience the game. And so for me, that kind of extends with this idea of who we are as a post-human subject, that we're constantly being shaped and formed by all of the things around us, and we perform our subjectivities in different ways. So if we take, you know, this podcast, for example, we're performing specific kind of subject positions based on you being the host and me being the guest. And so each of us is informing the kind of subjectivity of the other there. You can't be host without a guest, and I can't be guest without a host. And it's sort of the same thing with the avatar and gamer, where there are these again, that sense of, you know, I can't be a gamer if I've haven't got a game to play ever. You know, you could, it doesn't mean you're necessarily doing it in the moment, but with the avatar gamer subjectivity, that's where I'm looking specifically at how are these entities coming together to shape behaviors and understandings and feelings, again, that we hold kind of within our bodies. So for me, all of that kind of demonstrates, again, this kind of post-human nature. And I get it, you know, I get annoyed at a team as well. There's like, it's not all kind of, you know, me caring about her. There are times where, like, again, in the book, I talk about being frustrated with her. And there it seems like, you know, oh, well, that might not seem like you're this kind of lovely post-human subjectivity that comes together from both of you. But actually, even when I'm referring to her as her, and even when it seems like there's that kind of critical difference and distance between self and other, actually, again, it's very much all informed by that relationship, by that engagement, and by how each of those different entanglements allows different ways of being and different subjectivities to emerge. So yes, it's very much a kind of way of thinking about, I suppose, how are we rejecting those humanistic binaries of self and other, and in doing so, allowing ourselves to understand our subjectivity not as being, you know, that I am this one specific self and that I never change and that I'm in control. It's very much more thinking about subjectivity from a perspective of understanding just how entangled we are with the world around us, with the others around us. And so in post-human gaming, I'm focusing very specifically on a really small part of that, this relationship specifically between me and a team. But actually, from a wider post-human perspective, you would also take into account, you know, the game developers, the software, the servers that house the game, the computer that I play on, and looking at how each of those different entities shapes that subjectivity and allows different things to occur, basically, in different ways. And then again, from the kind of critical post-humanist perspective that I'm using, I am thinking about that in, again, in specifically sort of embodied and affective ways, because of drawing on that feminist tradition of understanding that when we think about knowledge, traditionally and historically from these kind of humanist histories and from our kind of patriarchal histories and societies, we are usually kind of valuing one specific form of knowledge. And there's very much this kind of, again, humanistic, rational, reasonable worldview where it's all kind of about science and objectivity. Whereas from a feminist perspective, bringing the body back into the picture, and from a post-human perspective, disrupting again that any kind of binaries between mind and body is really important for progressing that project.
Right. Well, thank you very much. These were fascinating insights, Poppy. I can clearly see that we are navigating uncharted territories in the realm of digital game studies here. So I want to thank you again for being on the show today and sharing your expertise. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
So, dear listeners, I hope you liked this episode. Now, of course, who wouldn't? If you are an author and or an editor in the field of digital game research or studies yourself and want to talk about your latest publication, please do not hesitate. Again, please do not hesitate to contact me under rudolf.indast@googlemail.com. Alternatively, please send me a direct message on social media. You will find me under Rudolf Indast on Facebook and Instagram, and under @GameStudies on Blue Sky and also on LinkedIn. Take care. Goodbye. Have a great time.